Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Chef Archibald, I really appreciate you coming on to the show today, taking the time out of your super busy schedule. For those that have never seen this gorgeous face before, with me today is Chef Josh Archibald, the Executive Chef of Culinary Development at Tillamook Creamery. So again, welcome on. How are things going out on the West Coast?
Thanks for having me, Chef. Things on the West Coast are great. It's spring break time, and that's always an uptick in visitors to our beautiful Tillamook Creamery in Tillamook, Oregon. We've got a lot of irons in the fire, and we're a growing company, and a lot of exciting stuff going on with our brand.
I love it. I got to tell a story of how we met 3-4 years ago. And after seeing the products, like I'd seen the brand, but obviously when you go to the grocery store, it's a little bit higher price point. And so I kind of always steered away from it. But after trying the product, you now have an entire allegiance of the Fell family, because my entire cheese drawer is nothing but Tillamook cheeses and every ice cream under the sun. Because they carry it locally here, every single kind, the freezer is just packed. There's probably 5 pints of ice cream because we can never decide what one to have. So we literally just buy any one that's amazingly delicious. So I just got to throw that out there that I may be a little biased in this conversation because we absolutely love the product. So maybe tell the folks a little bit about Tillamook. If they don't know who they are, you should know who Tillamook is, but maybe just a little bit about their history, and then we'll kind of backtrack into how you got there.
Yeah, of course. So Tillamook is a town and a county on the Oregon coast. It sits about 80 miles west of Portland. And we've been a farmer-owned dairy co-op that's now B Corp certified for over 115 years. And we started making cheddar. Actually, butter was our first product 115 years ago, and then cheddar. And then about 60 years ago, we started making ice cream. Now, we were very saturated in the Northwest, in Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and potentially California too. And about 11 years ago, we hired a CEO that had very, very strong growth goals. And that has now pushed us to be a national brand. So on retail shelf stores, you can find us in just about every retailer. We're in 85% of grocery stores across the country.
Yeah, it's fascinating, the portfolio, and it keeps growing. I know even from like a year ago, from me being at the grocery store and seeing it now, it is really grown with the different varieties, the shreds, the new products, that new whole milk mozzarella is just absolutely delicious, just a perfect balance. But you're seeing it all. And again, in the ice cream section, I think it takes a door or two at our local grocery store of all, because they carry almost every single flavor that's available. So that's incredible. So I did some digging on your background, right? Coming from a large family, I came from a large family. There was a lot of similarities, it felt like. I'm assuming you had the traditional Sunday dinners and the big family get-togethers.
Absolutely. I still hold, and I'm a father of four now. So I still hold Sunday dinner as like the premium cream of the crop, right? Like we gather with kids and their commitments all the time, and my wife and her commitments. We still make an effort to have a late afternoon, early evening Sunday dinner that just is something I grew up with doing and feels so special, right? You break out the Sunday sauce.
Yeah, for sure. It was a tradition. Everyone sat down, you broke bread. It was just a place to get together. And I'm assuming that kind of led, I saw that you had started in the kitchen pretty early, around 14. But what's that kind of journey been for you? Because you've worked at a couple really cool establishments. So maybe starting from when, you got into the kitchen, really what drew you in? I'm assuming it was that family and just being around food. But what was it that really drew you into becoming a chef?
Yeah. So, both my parents worked. And so I could see from a young age, it was a big obligation to get meals on the table for six kids, right? I'm the third of six in my family. And it didn't take a lot for me to like try to lean in and help. And I was terrible at first. And my mom was patient with me. And my grandmothers on both sides were very food passionate, right? They lived in Utah and had been brought up in this very food first culture and the importance of breaking bread together. So I started helping my mother from a young age, maybe I'm 11 or 12 in Oregon, because we're such a tourist economy. You can have full-time employment at the age of 14. So on the day I turned 14, I started as a dishwasher at a restaurant in Seaside, Oregon. Tourist town, pizza restaurant. And I started in the dish pit and I had some other responsibilities, mopping, cleaning up the restaurant before we opened. And I just was really enamored by kind of the culture and the people that filled that kitchen. It made me feel much older and more adult than I was at 14. And I really kind of fixated on that. And I loved it. I loved the act of hospitality. I loved serving people. And I loved cooking food and learning about it. So, you know, as that kind of went on, I worked at that restaurant for 5 or 6 years, and then I stepped away to do something totally unrelated. And then I came back to kind of manage that restaurant. And honestly, I almost bought it when I was in my early 20s, but decided to kind of pursue another venture and decided to eventually go to culinary school at Oregon Culinary Institute.
So how old were you when you ended up going to the Culinary Institute?
Yeah, so I was 23, probably, when I started Oregon Culinary Institute, with a fair amount of cooking kind of behind me all through this time. You know, I'd come home from school, even in middle school, and I'd like click on the Food Network, and there were some of the greats, right? And I'm watching them, and I'm watching them entertain guests, and I'm watching them entertain superstars, and I'm just like, man, this is cool. And I think at one point I was young and married. I got married at 22, and I turned to my wife and I was like, I think I could make a career out of this, right? Like, I was in some imbalance of really what am I going to do with my life. And it just kind of clicked, and she supported that, and we started kind of carving out a path to make that viable.
Yeah, and I think something is said, again, this isn't advice, it's just I went back like two. I went to culinary school when I was 24, and it was kind of not the same. I hadn't worked in kitchens a whole lot, but I always had that, again, that growing up around food, and my great-grandmother, I remember being in the kitchen with her. And I don't know, it just gives a sense of like, I don't know, maybe you take it a little more serious, especially at that age, because you've kind of gone through a little bit and then you're putting through the gauntlet. And I know my chefs, we're here to learn how to cook and to be professionals. And I think it gave me kind of a leg up in that space. So you kind of get out of culinary school. Now, did you go right to the Wayfarer from that, or was there a gap between before you went to the Wayfarer?
Yeah, actually, I started at the Wayfarer, which is a beautiful oceanfront restaurant in gorgeous Cannon Beach, Oregon. You know, Cannon Beach is just an incredible town, and it's one of only a couple restaurants that actually oversee the water. And I had started there actually before I started at Oregon Culinary Institute. And it was kind of the help, the push to kind of really make me commit. This was my first time in a real kitchen, a real resort that ran 3 meals a day, that did events and weddings and all sorts of catering stuff also. And I really liked the vibe. So I was there for about 6 or 8 months, and I enrolled in a program that started, you know, I think in September or so. And I commuted into Portland while still working at the Wayfarer. For that whole year of culinary school, the big appeal for me at that point was that it was just a 4-day-a-week commitment. So I could still work, you know, 35 to 40 hours a week, which was beneficial to me. I had a young son and another young one on the way. And, you know, when I made it through that successfully, I was promoted to sous chef at the Wayfarer.
So then how long were you there? And then how does that transition to like Tillamook? Was it like, okay, I've had enough of the restaurant, the grind, the daily hustle, or was it just something else or an opportunity that just presented itself that you're just like, I can't turn this down?
I think it was kind of a balance of both. In total, I spent almost 14 years there. So first as sous chef, and then a few years later as executive chef. I spent 7 or 8 as executive chef, and I left there as the executive chef manager. So I was also taking care of front of house operations. That was a growth move for me to try to understand, you know, how do we manage service staff and bar inventories and all that other stuff that I didn't have a ton of exposure to at that point. It was definitely important to teach me, you know, I'm managing a team as big as, you know, 60 or 70 at that point was really important to my career and my growth. I think what happened was I kind of got to the point where I had accomplished what I wanted to accomplish and what I thought was possible. And the restaurant had gone from kind of independent ownership to a third party management company. And that wasn't really, I could see that wasn't going to gel with kind of the future I saw for the restaurant or the future that I saw for kind of what we were doing there. And I'm not knocking that at all. It's just maybe a different vision. And that happens sometimes in those situations. And so, you know, I got to be very strategic. Well, first I kind of did a deep dive into me and was like, well, you could rest your laurels out here and just kind of coast it out and do this for, you know, another 10 or 15 or 20 years. And I just didn't feel real good about that. I wanted to be a little more advantageous about that. I wanted a new opportunity. I got to be pretty particular about what that opportunity would look like. And I did a lot of like self-reflection, you know, kind of what is the dream job for Josh at that point? And that felt like a great position to be in. And the fact that I could be slow and strategic about it was great. Because there's not a lot of employment opportunities on the North Oregon coast, right? In kitchens. And I was already running what I considered the best, if not one of the best, right? Like in the county or in a 60-mile square radius.
So then did Tillamook just post it or did someone approach you? Like how did that kind of that coming together happen?
Yeah. So interesting. Tillamook, and I had heard this through the grapevine that they were looking for what they were advertised as a head chef. And I threw my name in the hat. I dusted off my resume I got an interview about a month later and basically through the interview process, and it was pretty robust because they really wanted someone that was a good cultural fit for them. You know, I talked to them really openly because again, I was happy where I was and I was doing great things. I wanted to find the right fit. So I was open about what I wanted and what I saw as needed. Growing up on the Oregon coast, I know the brand very, very well. I grew up with it. I've watched them grow through years and years. I've visited the creamery in Tillamook many, many times as a kid. Anytime family came from out of town, we would jet down there and go do that as an experience, pick up cheese curds. And so I was familiar with them. And so in that interview process, I could kind of say, you know, here's what you're looking for. Keep in mind, they'd never really employed a chef before. So like, here's what you're looking for on paper. And I can do that. Mm-hmm. And I think I can do that pretty easy. Like, here's this other piece of value that I think I can bring to the brand that you're not even thinking about or aware of. And so we were able to kind of, through some negotiations, change the job title to executive chef. And I was hired. And that was February of 2020. So as you know, that was a pretty good time to depart from brick and mortar restaurant work, right? And when March came around and shutdowns came around and lockdowns came around, I felt like people were just kind of looking at me like, what do we do with this new chef guy? And so they just started sliding me assignments. And that was really the work that I was really interested in, you know, lean in with research and development and work on this, or lean in with marketing and work on this, or lean in with category management and, you know, try to improve some recipes that we're giving consumers on our butter packaging, you know, that sort of stuff. And through that process, I also got to open our first ever outside of Tillamook, like food experience, which is at the Portland Airport. So we opened in July of 2020, new construction in an airport in a pandemic. First time I've ever done this outside of Tillamook. Wow. It was a great experience to go through, and I got to, and then subsequently I got to kind of help define some of the foods that, you know, we want to be known for and how they show up to our consumers.
That is so amazing in what just going through a pandemic, that alone, I don't think anyone understands how difficult doing anything was through the pandemic, whether that be the supply chain, a restaurant, surviving it, getting through it, and you to do kind of a little bit of everything through the whole thing. That's a testament to who you are. And I could see that when we met, like your passion, your integrity for food in general, not just cheese, but food as a whole. And the way that you describe it, you can feel, you know, that kind of, I don't know, local, fresh. I don't know. That's just what the vibe you get when you're in a room. You just bring this vibrancy that just makes people light up. And then obviously the food is just absolutely amazing. I mean, the stuff that you have come up with that I have tried is just blows my mind. And I'm like, I would have never thought of it. Something as simple as ice cream on a pretzel bun. I mean, the last food ovation we were at, I was like, there's no way this is any good. And then as soon as we had it, I was like, oh my God. And now I use it as like a staple when somebody wants to do a dessert. It, you know, it's kind of a ripoff. I'm like, we should probably do these ice cream sandwiches, but we're going to do it on a pretzel bun. And then people kind of give that what? But then when they have it, that experience that kind of, I think, lights all the chefs up, it's just like, they're like, this actually really works. And we're like, I know, I had someone show it to me and it worked. So it's amazing. So like, as of like today, right, let's fast forward, we're through the pandemic, kind of what is it that, you know, I know obviously you do different type of food shows and type presentations, but, you know, what does the executive chef at Telemo get to kind of do? Because I want the audience to know, I've had some other chefs on that, again, there are so many outlets for people in this industry, not just to be the chef at a restaurant or the front of house manager, but there's other outlets, there are corporations. And to be able to delve into like what you do so they can kind of hear like, wow, that's something potentially I would want to do, and then give them that spark to want to potentially talk to a company and pursue that kind of job.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I am all about trying to make sure that I have this kind of chef eagerness requirement almost that we're spending time and we're cultivating the next level of culinary talent. That's something I'm super passionate about, you know. So my job now, I lean in with our food service sales team pretty hard. And about 50% of my time is kind of talking to restaurant owners, operators, chefs, corporate chefs, that are looking for some ideation, that are looking for some ideas, or trying to kind of reinvigorate a brand to make it applicable now. And I get to travel the country to talk to them and present ideas about how Telemo could maybe be an asset to them as they're developing menus. But that's not all that I do. I still have kind of some responsibilities for they're high level responsibilities. It's not day to day, but for our food service offerings at the Telemo Creamery, you know, that is something that exists that is a differentiator for us. Some of our competition, you know, they don't even make cheese. So they don't have a creamery to show off people that are actually like packaging cheese and processing things and a place to visit, right? That we really call home. And we're so proud of that community and the impact that we've been able to have in that community. I get to lean in with our marketing and advertising team and help with some social media content and some other things. You know, when people ask on a very high level, I think my answer, the best way I can summarize it, is I want to empower consumers that walk by our products at the grocery store. I want to empower their decision to buy our product and then support their decision to buy our product. So, you know, if they want to go home and make mac and cheese, And this is work that's still happening. We're not there yet. And I don't know if we ever will be, but we're trying. If they want to go home and make mac and cheese, like, what's the cheese best picked off the grocery store shelf to go home and do that, right? They want to build a cheese board. What's the best pairing that they can do that? And to make sure that they have access to that information. And so therein, we kind of take a little bit of the risk, like you mentioned earlier. Like, we understand that it is a little more of a splurge than buying commodity or someone else's branded cheddar. And that takes a commitment from the consumer, but we want to support them through that commitment, right? So give them access and tools that they need to really be to execute a successful dish at home.
That's awesome. So what would you say makes Tillamook, you know, unique in the dairy industry, right? There's a lot of dairy producers and a lot of people who make cheese, but what would you say is that differentiating factor for Tillamook?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there's a couple answers. I will start with saying that generally For our cheddars, we don't pasteurize milk. We actually heat shock milk, which is a few degrees short of true pasteurization. Now, what that allows us to do is retain some of those good nuances that are happening in the milk, right? And then we go to make cheddar, and we actually have our own set of, we have a lab team that does our own growth of cultures, right? Mm-hmm. So most people on our size would actually just buy, you know, store-bought, big-box shelf cultures, and we're cultivating them to actually make a cheese that can't be replicated anywhere else. Then we go through that process, and we're packing in 40-pound blocks. Almost everything we do is in 40-pound blocks of cheese. And what that allows is for our cheese to cool and age consistently. So a lot of our competition is out there, and they're packing in 600-pound blocks, right? Which are big as a table. And so you can understand pretty quickly that the way that they cool or the nuances within them can be pretty blatant, right? So we truly put forth this like artisan effort on a large scale to make this product incredible. Beyond that, the FDA and the USDA have no rules about what makes a sharp cheddar or what makes an extra sharp cheddar, right? There's no, you can say that it's sharp cheddar, and some of the cheese that's out there actually takes that journey from fresh milk to quote unquote sharp cheddar in 2 weeks, right? Whereas we want to be very transparent about that. Our medium cheddar is 60-day aged, and actually the recipe is 70 days. And that's 70 days until it moves from block till it gets processed at all, whether that's it gets sliced, it gets shredded, it gets transported, or it gets broken down into 2-pound blocks or 5-pound blocks or 10-pound blocks, right? And then moving beyond that, our sharp cheddar is 9 months. And beyond that, our extra sharp yellow cheddar is 15 months, and our extra sharp white cheddar is 18 months. And we go as far as 10 years. Now, you cannot make a cheddar that's 10 or 9 years old without starting with a perfect product, because any impurities in that kind of first cheddar process just compound and compound and compound year after year after year. And you'll get a bite of cheese at 7 years or 5 years or 10 years that's almost unpalatable. It's bitter. And we couldn't age cheese for 10 years if we pasteurized, right? The heat shocking is really the key to that. So those are some of the really incredible things that we do that are a little different that we're so proud of. You know, I read at one point 12% of the aging cheese in the country is in Tillamook, Oregon, right? So like we have warehouses full of cheese because we make cheese every day and we don't touch it for at least 70 days.
Yeah.
But we also have a lot of stuff that's, you know, 2 years, 5 years, 7 years, 10 years old. We also have a sensory team. So it's a team of, you know, 7 to 10 people. And I have a meeting with them sometimes at 9 a.m. in the morning. And they taste every batch that we produce. And they've sometimes gone through 15 batches by 9 in the morning. Like, they taste cheese professionally. It's a really cool job. And they're very, very good at it. And what they're trying to make sure that we don't have any nuances that are off. But they're also trying to identify, like, this is a perfect cheese to age long term. Everything that we did here ended up perfectly. And this is a great cheese. Or will be a great cheese in 5 years, right? And so they're kind of identifying, and they're using kind of what's happening in the market to kind of propriate. This needs to go here. This batch should go here. This batch is great to be sliced and sold now. So,
yeah, 2 points. One, if you've never tried the 10-year-aged white cheddar, you must. It is an absolute splurge that it is. I don't even know how to describe. It is something like you've never had before in your life, and it is good. You know, a lot of people hear that and they're just like, it can be so strong and pungent. No, this is incredible. And two, like you said, with your aging, I have people, I'll tell them, I'm like, you should really try the product. And I'll tell them, go with a mild cheddar, because your mild is more closely related to what they see in the traditional market as a sharp cheddar, because it's truly aged longer, where, like you said, they may get theirs out in 2 weeks. So I tell people that, I'm like, they're like, oh, I want to get that extra sharp. And I'm like, I hope you're ready for it, because it is strong cheese. It's delicious, but it's that testament of that time frame of how things just do develop flavor over time, and how your cheese is given that time frame, a lot stronger in its flavor than people expect. And so it's always funny to have them try it and they're just like, oh wow, this is a lot more than I was expecting. And I'm like, yeah, because it's just high quality. But then it's like wine, right? They get used to it and then they want that next level and the next level. Yeah. What about the farmers, right? Isn't it a farmer co-op, and is Tillamook, is it owned by the farmers, or is it a farmer owned company?
Yeah, so not only B Corp certified, but we are farmer owned. We're owned by a group of farmers that all are in Tillamook County, and in Tillamook County there are more cows than there are people. And you know, for 115 years, on my hat here, you can see this boat, and this boat is actually called, and you'll see it in some of our marketing, it's the Morning Star. And 115 years ago, there was no great way to move product from Tillamook to Portland, right? The road system was not defined. And so a group of farmers got together and decided they would have a boat built and call it the Morning Star. That Morning Star would drop into Tillamook Bay, hit the Pacific Ocean. It would sail north to the Columbia River, and then east in the Columbia River all the way to Portland to offload product, right? And that was kind of the beginnings of our co-op. Actually, at that point, they were trying to preserve milk. So they were selling butter in the Portland market. But, you know, everything that we do is tied back to those farmers. And I don't say that lightly. We want them to be able to sustain their quality of life for years to come. So if you're a farmer, you know, your property taxes increase every single year, and your feed prices increase, and your diesel prices increase, mm-hmm. and your equipment prices increase. That stuff never goes down. It just continues to go up. When we're talking about farmer families, and when we say farmer owner, sometimes that can be four to five to even six generations at one time, right? So you're talking about a group of a single farmer owner actually represents 30 people, right? And they are proud of what they do, and we're trying to make sure that they can sustain the way of life that they really want and that they're so proud of, not just next year and not 3 years from now, but in 50 more years. How are we protecting this to make sure that as all the prices of those things continue to increase, they're supported and they're able to do that, because it is a heritage for so many of them that they are so proud of.
Yeah. How many families or I don't know how you put it in perspective, if it's number of families or number of farms. How many roughly would you say make up the co-op?
So there is, I think today there's just shy of 70. And they are all, minus one or two, they're all in Tillamook County. One is in the county north, and one is actually a great partner of ours that's a little bit east in Boardman that's done some incredible work for us. So, you know, they come together a couple times a year to make some decisions. We have board meetings, and I get this incredible opportunity to cook for our top leadership and our board when they gather. And, you know, we're well over $1 billion brand now. And so you think those board meetings would be filled with Maseratis. And honestly, man, they're Dodge trucks, right? And there's guys like rolling in with cowboy boots on with cow poop on them, right? Like, that is a real thing. And that's really, you know, that story is so genuine to me. Part of why I wanted this job or wanted to take this job was I was just at a point where I wanted someone to live the values that they said they were living, right? It wasn't just company letterhead. And that's really what I found with the brand, right? Like, we have some shared values, and it is 100% okay for me to sit in a meeting and talk to a director or a executive vice president and just call them out and be like, hey, that doesn't feel very one team, or that doesn't feel very genuine care to me, and like to stop that meeting and then have that conversation about how that looks. So everything that we do has been built to support these farming families and sustain their way of life moving forward. And we had a CEO that was just, he was smart enough to understand that that didn't happen without some growth, which is why you saw us really push for growth over the last 10 or 12 years, right? And really gain some really solid market share in Florida and in Washington, D.C. and in Austin, Texas and in Denver. kind of moving from beyond the Northwest. That's all in the sake to keep them doing what they're doing.
Yeah, I love to hear that about the board and those folks literally having the cowboy boots on. They're not afraid to get their hands dirty. They work right alongside the families. It's not just like you said, it's go out, check on things, and all right, I'm going to go on my vacation home. They are in this day to day because I think that's just in the, I don't know, it's in a farmer's blood. Again, I grew up on corn and soybean, not cattle. But you just, there's a certain work ethic that you develop as you grow up that is just work hard, do the best that you can, no matter what it is. If you're a gas station attendant, be the best gas station attendant. If you're the janitor, be the best damn janitor there is in the world. If you make cheese, you better be the best damn cheesemaker there is. That's just, so that's kind of how I perceive the brand is it's just like be the absolute best of what you guys represent. Absolutely love it. So with some of the cheese, obviously, you know, we touched briefly, but you guys do ice cream. And I want to talk about some of the other new things too, right? There's cream cheese that I think just got released. I haven't had a chance to play around with it. And I know the Mott's just got reformulated. So maybe let's talk about some of the products and some of the new stuff or the evolution of some of the products you already had.
Yeah. So for retail offerings, we just launched a 4-SKU line of whole milk mozzarella products. So we have it in a 1-pound block. We have it in a shred. We have it in a slice and we have it in a snack portion, which is really cool. These are these little 0.75 ounce portions. They're a great snack. My kids take them to school every single day. Great to keep in the fridge and just a quick kind of pick me up. That's been an exciting launch. That was just at the first of the year. For cream cheese, you know, we've had some existing tub cream cheese, spreadable cream cheese, right, that meant to be spread cold directly from the container. But a couple years ago, we started working on what would a brick cream cheese look like from Tillamook. And obviously, there's a competitor there that we had our eyes on and did a whole bunch of testing against. And we decided that it was worth pursuing. And we got to do some testing and some chef friends from kind of across the country that I lean on to help us do some testing really came back with favorable results for that. And we built this packaging that was just gorgeous. It's blue. It's a couple tones blue. It's an 8-ounce brick cream cheese. It is meant to be your go-to baking, cooking, savory application cream cheese. We just launched that at the first of the year. I'm so excited about where that takes us. I love talking about this chocolate collection ice cream launch that we did first of the year also. It's SKUs of chocolate ice cream. Each of them have 35% more cocoa powder than normal. They are the chocolate lover's dream. If you have not tried the brownie batter, I strongly recommend it. And the German chocolate cake. Love them both. And for the first time ever, we also went to market with a frozen consumer good. So we launched 4 SKUs of frozen pizzas and 3 to 4, depending on where you're at, SKUs of frozen mac and cheese. Now, we've never attempted that before. There's a lot of cheese companies that are in the mac and cheese frozen game. But as near as we can tell, we're the first cheese company to launch a frozen pizza. And we're super excited. I got to work really closely with the development of both those projects. And it's been awesome to see them hit store shelves nationwide and now see people really enjoying those pizzas and that mac and cheese.
Yeah. I got to get my hands on some of the pizza. I had no idea about the pizza because that is my stitch. I love pizza and I had no idea. It's not in mine. So I'm going to have to go looking around to see if it's in the Chicago market or, you know, maybe you can throw me a bone and send some this way so I can get it out to me and my family and all the people around me because I am a pizza sucker. And again, just switching from the mozzarella I was using to this whole milk. Oh, my God. My kids are absolutely in love because I make little pizza Lunchables and it's that farm thick shred. If I don't have the time to shred my own, I'll just buy the pre-bag. And they are just like, Dad, why is this so much better? And I was like, because it just is. I was like, you know why we have the ice cream in the freezer? You know why we have these others? That's why we buy this. And they're like, it's so good. So I'm assuming those little mozzarella, are they the same ones as like the cheddar cheese? The little
we have a medium cheddar, we have a sharp cheddar, and we have some Colby Jack, but yeah, same ones. So they should be available on some grocery shelf. You can always go to Tillamook.com, and we have this great tool where you can type in kind of what you're looking for, and it will show you with live inventory. It will show you where you can find it near you. Interesting you say that about pizza. I have a full sheet pan pizza that just came out of the oven, and my kids will be home from school here shortly, and it's got whole milk mozzarella and pepperoni on it. Like, it's the perfect afternoon snack for them.
Oh, absolutely. Anything that you can, like, there's all this stuff that came out like kind of Q1. Anything you can, I don't know, hint us towards, or like what's in development for kind of the rest, you know, Q2 and beyond, or where your sights are set, or anything ambitious?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of conversations about that. Part of our heritage and you know, having done this for 115 years and also keeping farmers very much protected, we tend not to move very fast. And I think that's while it could seem like a downfall, I think it's actually a benefit, right? So, you know, we have meetings and we talk about seven other things that we could sell on a frozen grocery store shelf next to our mac and cheese and next to our pizza. And we could execute all of them. We have a couple great partners that would help us figure that out and do that for us. But that being said, we're doing a disservice to the brand if we don't really support this mac and cheese product and this pizza product as much as we can while it launches, troubleshoot any issues, cooking instruction issues, sourcing issues, distribution issues. You know, we want to think about that. We want to take our time. We want to fix all of that. We want to learn from that before we even start to dive into the next thing. So, you know, a great thing to keep your lookout for is, you know, we've always done family size ice cream, but now we've launched pints in our top six or eight flavors of family size ice cream. So they're hitting grocery store shelves now. And they're kind of built for people that have smaller freezers, people that just don't want to commit to a whole family size ice cream, people that want to try a new flavor. That gives us a lot of opportunity to kind of step into convenience stores potentially. We did some study in the last month or so and asked a whole bunch of moviegoers if a pint of ice cream was intimidating to them. And we kind of thought we knew the answer, and they came back and were like, no, I'd totally share a pint of ice cream at the movies with my guest or with my partner, right? So, you know, as we kind of have launched that, I'm really excited about the new avenues that opens for us. For sure.
Yeah. So I don't know about most people out there, but we can't keep one of those family size ones in our house longer than like 3 days. It's obscene. So I don't know. Pint may be great to try a flavor, but you're going to be disappointed when you get to the end and there's nothing left, because we just can't keep the stuff in our house. And like you said, the chocolate collection, oh man, we went, we did the brownie batter and we did one, the other one. It was like the chocolate chunk or chocolate within chocolate. I don't remember which flavor it was, and the kids love it. I mean, I have a feeling I know what your favorite flavor is, coming from Oregon. And after having conversation with our mutual friends over at Oregon Fruit, I have a feeling it might be the Marionberry, but correct me if I'm wrong.
So Marionberry pie has been my go-to flavor for like 25 years, right? I still love it. I'm a big fruit and ice cream person, and I'm not necessarily chocolate and ice cream. I love our mountain huckleberry also. Both of those are interesting for us because they're so Northwest focused that when you get out of the Northwest, someone will look at a menu and be like, what is a Marionberry, right? Well, it's an indigenous berry to Oregon that was cultivated by Oregon State University. It's kind of a hybrid of a blackberry and a boysenberry. The pods are a little bit bigger. We love them here. They don't get a lot of traction outside of the Northwest, but it will always be my favorite, as will the mountain huckleberry, which are, you know, indigenous to kind of Eastern Washington, Eastern Oregon, and Idaho.
Now, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring it up, because I found this interesting, and I personally want to know, what was it like being on Top Chef season 18? Because Tillamook kind of sponsored or did something, and I saw that doing some research, and I was like, that is one of the coolest things I've ever seen. So what was that experience like, being on there and your involvement?
Yeah, it was a long process. We knew, I think from the get-go, And this is mid-pandemic, keep in mind. So from the get-go, we knew that we could probably buy sponsorship to Top Chef as they filmed in Portland. And that don't get me wrong, that's a win, but it's a bot win, right? So then the next step was kind of what would it take to get them to shoot an episode at the Creamery? And and then the third step was what would it take for us to get some on-camera presence during that episode? And we were able to kind of cultivate a relationship, and I was able to show around the production group for Top Chef. And it just really made sense for them, I think. And middle of the pandemic, I was asked then to be on camera, and I had to sign an NDA. And if I said the words Top Chef, and this was for like 9 months, if I said the word Top Chef, I was going to get personally sued for $50,000 every time I said the term. So the team that knew was only 4 or 5 people deep at the whole company, and they're very quiet about it. So quiet that I had to quarantine to kind of join their bubble. And I spent about 9 days at a hotel in downtown Portland. They had a car pick me up, drive me to Portland. I spent about 9 days at a hotel, and I tried to join a work meeting one day, and people were like, where are you? And I was like, I'm traveling, I'm working. And they're like, no one's traveling. Like, what are you doing? And my boss sends me a note because she knew. She was like, no more work meetings for you. So I'm just like sitting in this hotel room for 9 days, just like scratching my head. But it was such a great experience, you know, that season, because of what was going on. The judges were all, or kind of the guests or the consumers were all past Top Chef stars. So it was great to meet some of them. And Tom was great. And Padma was incredible. Gail was just a gem. We got to eat some ice cream after we were done shooting the episode, but really incredible. We sat down on the upper deck, kind of the viewing gallery of the Creamery, and everyone has got their phones in their pocket, and someone just says rolling, and they're just rolling. And about 4 hours went by while we shot this. I mean, you go around the entire table one time, something positive about the dish. Entire table again, something negative about the dish. Then entire table again, kind of a summary of the dish. And they're just looking for quips, you know, that they'll edit into what actually gets seen. But no one got up. No one looked at their phone. It was pretty incredible just to go through that whole experience. And I do like to say, so the episode after our episode at the Tomah Creamery was shot in the kitchen at the Wayfair, right? Which was the restaurant at that time I had just left.
And had kind of
busted years of work to try to put on the map and build a name for myself. So they, you know, 2 episodes of the season were kind of focused on the coast. And one was the place I was now and trying to figure out how to best serve that brand. And one was the place I had left after 14 years of just blood, sweat, and tears dumped into it. So that really felt like a big win for me personally, not something I think a lot of people can say. So there's a scene in the episode after the Tillamook one where I think it's Dawn is putting some Dungeness crab into a steamer. That steamer I ordered and then returned on manufacturer defect 3 times before we got it right. Like I designed it, right? They're using a pass that I designed. They're putting food on plates that I bought myself. So
that's incredible to hear. Cause when I saw that, I was like, what an opportunity, you know, to be that guest judge or just be a part of that kind of production. And I had to ask, cause I was like, there's no way I can get through this conversation without at least getting some skinny on what that looked like. So let's jump into the weeds with some rapid fire questions. So what's a kitchen gadget you can't live without?
Garlic press. I love to peel garlic and just squeeze it through a garlic press. I know it's a single use thing. I know everything we were ever taught was that that's baloney and you should run a chef's knife. And there's something satisfying. I'll put a couple peeled cloves of garlic into a garlic press.
Sometimes practical is best, and that definitely gets the job done. We did favorite ice cream. What's favorite cheese?
You know, that's kind of like picking a favorite child. I will tell you, the one that I have at home, no matter what, is just sharp yellow cheddar. Now, I feel like that is a versatile cheese for us. It is built to melt, but it's also incredible enough that I can load it onto a small cheese board by itself, right? Like it's standalone. It's got that flexibility. And often people say, well, I made mac and cheese with our 7-year-old cheddar. And I'm like, you know, as much as that's cool for you, I rarely recommend melting a cheese that's 7 years old, right? Like it should be eaten at room temp in small amounts. That's sharp for us at 9 months. It can kind of cover both of those. It still has some meltability to it. And I use it more than any other cheese I use at home.
Love it. So you've got the creamery there. Do you have any secret menu items? You know, you go to like an In-N-Out Burger and there's the secret menu item. Do you have anything like that at the creamery?
We don't, but that's a great question. And it's something we've talked about quite a bit before. You know, we spent so much time defining. There was 4 dishes really that we were working on. And that was a lot of the first couple of years of my time with the company, was really defining how we showed up in the Tillamook cheeseburger, Tillamook mac and cheese, a Tillamook grilled cheese sandwich, and battered and fried Tillamook cheese curds. I am so proud of those. I eat a grilled cheese sandwich at least a couple days a week. It's one of my favorite like comfort foods. I love talking about it. I just shot a little bit of social media content surrounding National Grilled Cheese Day, which is coming up in just a couple days that'll go live. But I'm basically walking you through how I make the perfect grilled cheese sandwich.
Oh, that's awesome. By the time this airs next week, I'll have to get that link and put that in the show notes so people can give that a watch too. Is there any hidden gems on the Oregon coast? Like anyone that's going to go out there and visit, obviously the creamery would be a place to visit, but any other hidden gems that people should visit?
Absolutely. So, a little town called Neatarts. It's about 10 or 12 miles from Tillamook. And in Neatarts, I truly believe we're cultivating the world's best oysters. And that's for a bunch of different reasons. But mostly it's because there's only one fresh water running into Neatarts Bay. So even in heavy rains, the salinity level of the bay stays pretty consistent. Now that's important. Mm-hmm. Jacobson Salt, who's, you know, kind of the country's first artisan salt producer. They're in Neatarts Bay for the exact same reason. Their business is evaporating seawater to collect salt, and they wanted a place where the salt was consistent as you could possibly get it. The oysters that are coming out of Neatarts Bay are incredible. Because of the salinity level and because of the artisan style kind of approach to the oyster farmers that I know there, it's just truly a gem. And then a little further up north about 20 miles, there's a couple spots where you can rent a boat year round. They'll rent you a boat and they'll bait a couple crab pots. And you can go out in a little 9.9 horsepower aluminum boat and drop crab pots and catch some Dungeness crab. And when you come back, they'll cook them for you. And if you don't catch any, you can buy some anyways. And there's some oysters. There's 2 spots and they're right next to each other. There's always a campfire burning. And that is like quintessential Oregon for me. Out on the water, even if you're not great with a boat, you're comfortable. You know, they'll make you feel comfortable enough with this little 9.9 horsepower motor. And you can go out and kind of try to catch some Dungeness crab.
Love it. Last one. What advice do you have for those aspiring young culinarians, those that want to become chefs?
Yeah, I think, I tell people really often that some of the best lessons I learned growing and trying to become a chef were things not to do. And as much as I'd like to say as our industry is perfect, it is not. And I think there's a group of chefs that are strong enough and have platforms now that they're really advocating for improvement of it. But, you know, at the end of the day, kitchens aren't perfect. And I learned a lot of do not do lessons from people that I worked for. And I've held those close to me, and I would walk away from interactions, you know, as a young cook and be like, you know, I will never do that to a person that I work with. I'll never talk to a server that way. I'll never talk to a general manager that way. I'll never talk to a line cook that way, right? There is a place for us kind of figuring out that give and take. It is not what it's been traditionally, and I'm okay with that. And I look forward to kind of trying to help push the industry towards this very much inclusive culture that I think kitchen should be, right? Where everyone, doesn't matter race, creed, color, ethnicity, whatever, like should be comfortable, and you should be based off kind of your willingness to go cook and your willingness to learn, rather than kind of what traditionally looked correct in a kitchen.
We're running up on time. Where does everyone go if they want to learn more about what you're doing, Tillamook is doing? What's the best places for them to catch that?
Yeah, you can always catch us at tillamook.com. You can check our e-commerce there. Also, if you needed to see some products, you can catch me at Chef Josh Archibald on Instagram. And I try to be real religious about kind of what I'm doing and where I'm going and how I'm doing it. You can catch me on LinkedIn also. So we're excited about the work that's happening. And I really try to track that and show my followers, like, we're growing as a brand, and here's the cool stuff that we're doing. And, you know, it's fun to hear them engage and share some kind of support and cheering in the audience for this brand that everyone on the North Oregon coast is so passionate about and so esteemed. I didn't mention it, but the high school at Tillamook they're the Tillamook cheesemakers, right? That's their mascot, right? Like, we are vested in this community and we're proud of that.
Absolutely love it. If you ever get a chance to interact with Chef Josh, he is an absolute pleasure to be around, his energy, his aura. So if you ever get a chance to be at any of the cool events that he's at, Food Ovation or the Creamery, try and get a hold of him, because it is an experience that you will never forget. So I want to say thank you for everything you bring to the industry. Thanks to Tillamook and introducing him to me, because now my family, that's all we have in our household is Tillamook cheese. So I just personally have to say thank you for that. And I'm kind of that living, breathing word of mouth. As soon as someone asks, you know, why do you always buy that? I tell them why. All the things that you had said, just really shortened down. So thank you. But that's all the time we have this week. So until next time, we'll catch you on the sunny side.
Thanks, Jeff.
HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.